The Occasional Dose of Fat, show number 105 for Friday, July 1st, 2016. Good evening, everybody. Got Sven Gomez and who's that guy?
Yeah, filling in for J.K. Levin this week is our musical director. And not only is he an incredible horn player, he's also third-generation bicycle industry professional. Give it up for a man that loves a good quality pair of dress slacks. Chris Daisy, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
None of those statements are true.
Absolutely.
Hey, the Weekly Dose of Fat is brought to you by Surly Ride Pants, because ninjas don't wear shorts.
It's the all pants, slacks, and trouser version of the Occasional Dose of Fat.
Learn more about bikes and ninjas at surlybikes.com.
My theory is that we have a fine show lined up this evening.
What's on the show this week, Crispy?
We start off the show with the event of the week. Summerfest? We welcome special guest Richard Palmer, the Carbon Doctor, to the program this evening. We check in with the Fatty Farm Field Report, brought to you by Quiring Cycles. The Quiring Triple B is the fattest ride on two wheels, featuring the new generation of 5.05-inch tires. Visit QuiringCycles.net to see the next level of bicycle exploration. We'll take calls from our listener. Our third caller will receive a new Surly Rally Sports Package. Plus, every caller gets a sample tin of Uncle Dick's bead slip. We talk about forks and knives. And in this evening's special segment, we introduce a new series called Gnome Proof Gear.
It's time for the freaking event of the week.
The event of the week this week is not a bike event specifically.
But
I would say that it's the best way to get to the event by far. They've got free bike parking and a guarded area where people watch over your gear. And Summerfest is the world's largest music festival here in Milwaukee. It's the reason why JK's not here. He's down there seeing Mr. Chris Christopherson and Willie Nelson.
Willie Nelson. Yeah.
We'll give him a little bit here. He should call in here in a couple of minutes.
But in the meantime, it's the Top of the Hill, boys.
Top of the Hill. Hey, Chris, get me one of those pinners out of there, please. Right on. A little toasty in the old studio today. We'll have to put the AC in by next time.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers.
And beers.
So if any of you guessed show number 105, that the show 100 beer cachet would run out, and we are moving on down the road. I would say it's going to be somewhere in the teens.
Did you see the tub out there?
Yeah, I saw that. Is that it?
That's what's left in the tub. So I thought maybe you want to take that to Dirt Church or something if you're going to have. And besides that, I want that tub out of here.
That is my tub.
Yeah, it's your tub.
Well, it's the Gnome Fest tub.
And it's now.
So who really owns Gnome Fest?
So there's still some in that tub from our friends at Oscar Blues there.
All right. So maybe it is 105. If I take those to Dirt Church, then...
Well, you know they'll be gone that day.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that Summerfest is going to have to live on its own volition.
Hey, let's take a break. And when we come back, we will have today's special guest, the Carbon Doctor, Mr. Richard Palmer.
USA builds innovative, technically superior bicycles that are race-ready, ride-driven, and tested to withstand the harshest conditions and tackle the toughest and roughest terrain. Learn more about Chumba's American-made Ursa Major at ChumbaUSA.com.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the radio program. With us on the telly is Mr. Richard Palmer, who is the owner of the Carbon Doctor. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Hi, happy to be here and to talk to you about a few of my passions, carbon fiber and bikes.
Fantastic. So let me do just a little bit of filling in the blanks here. I've known Richard for about 20 years. Right back when we were National Mountain Bike Patrollers, and I have great memories of Pedro Fest and trail building at the Southern Kettles. Richard has a long history with experience in composites, and I know that he started his journey in the sailing and Olympic yachting. Richard was a member of the Canadian Olympic squad, so... Is there anything else that did I miss anything there, Richard? Tell us about
How long have you got? I don't want. it's been a long journey, but suffice it to say, I guess I started. I learned how to sail as a kid, but I ended up immigrating to Canada to work for a company making the Tornado catamaran. And that was kind of like my entry into. It was high-performance composites. So back then, we didn't have carbon fiber so it was a different kind of technology. But, as my life and career progressed, I have, stayed with high-performance high-performance sailboats were kind of part of my initial, 15 years of composites. I ended up moving to California. I ended up starting a business down there where I built custom racing yachts, including, America's Cup. I didn't build America's Cup yachts, but I did a lot of components for America's Cup. And I built a bunch of different sailboats that were very successful racing internationally. And that kind of thing. Leaving California, I came to Wisconsin about 20 years ago, I guess now, nearly, and worked again in boats for about another 6 years. And then I actually went off into kind of the broader aspects of composites, working for material suppliers and being, like a technical resource and, interjecting my ideas and this kind of thing. And
because you worked for Owens
Corning
Corning for a while, right?
Owens Corning, yes. So I was exposed to a lot of different things. I did a lot of work with automotive and wind energy and that kind of thing. Just got a huge exposure to all the different aspects of composites. I had a job with a UK company after that was a leading provider of both technology and materials to the to various industries, automotive and wind energy and marine. So again, there I gathered a lot more experience. So I consider myself to be a pretty expert on composites.
You might even call yourself a doctor.
The carbon doctor.
Yeah,
obviously tons of experience. What led you to get into repairing plastic bike frames?
Well, since I got into painting Wisconsin, I got pretty hooked on, well, first of all, mountain biking. And, you know, thus my, you know, getting involved with the bike patrol and that kind of thing. And actually ended up racing bikes in the War Series and being reasonably successful at that. As things progressed, though, I kind of started to move a little bit to the roadside for the social aspect of that. And riding with a group out of Kettle Moraine, in the Kettle Moraine State Forest area, one of the folks that was, you know, riding in the group broke his frame and, you know, kind of asked me to say, you're in the carbon business, you know, carbon fiber, can you fix my frame? And I basically looked at him and said, yes, I probably could. Give me a try at it. And I, obviously that was successful. And then, you know, sometime later, another person came along and it grew from there. And that was about 8 years ago.
What do you figure, you know, how many have you done, do you think, in that time period?
Well, since I started?
Yeah, just curious how many people need your services.
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I guess since I started, probably, well, I, for 4 or 5 years, I was just doing it on the side, you know, so I was probably only doing one or two a month.
Right.
So it's only in the last, you know, 3 years, let's say, that it's become a full-time thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, maybe about 500 different,
that's a big number.
Absolutely.
That's a big number.
So, you know, having worked on that many bikes, what do you think the most common repair you do on like a carbon mountain bike frame or fat bike frame is?
Well, if you talk about fat bikes, for some reason, I guess the most common repair on a fat bike is a top tube. I don't know why particularly, but, you know, from
either strikes,
probably crashing the handlebars, hitting it.
Yeah, probably.
That kind of thing. But in, you know, on road frames, it is more, the most common is seat stays.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, chain stays and top tubes. And then there's, you know, they can be, you know, left on the roof of the car and driven into a garage. Usually,
been there.
Ends up with multiple issues. But on the fat bike side, I think it's more, I think as the carbon fiber fat bikes have been developed, they are, you know, to be able to make, them with as light as they are, they're actually cutting the corner a little bit more than the average mountain bike. So I would consider a fat bike to be a little bit more fragile than a regular mountain bike.
Right.
But, you know, so, yeah.
So is most of the damage crash-oriented, or is it like something, a bike falling off the roof of a car or hitting your aforementioned garage roof? You know, is the failure usually a result of some previous damage, or are they like catastrophic failures?
Well, they're usually, usually from crashing.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's the impact. You know, like a bike falls over and hits an iron railing or something like that. With a carbon fiber bicycle, you know, as they are today, very highly engineered pieces of sporting equipment, they are, you know, designed with, you know, finite element analysis and, you know, all of the carbon fiber is sort of laid out within the frame specifically to all of the loads and stresses that are in that frame. So, yeah, I forgot my train of thought here. Sorry.
That's all right.
That's all right.
So I have a question, if I can bring us back to the most common repair on a fat bike. So you said it was the top tube. So I have my my carbon bike and my brake lever has put a nice gouge in my top tube, and I bring that to you. What do you think that that's going to, what do you think the price would be to fix that? Approximately.
Well, a lot of times it depends on a number of factors. Obviously, it's the extent of the damage, the shape of the top tube, and I'll get back to that in a minute, but the average, I mean, the price, the way I think my estimating is I break down the structural repair, which is kind of making the bike set whole again, mm-hmm. and then the cosmetic, because, you know, some of the graphics, you know, it's all dependent upon the customer deciding sure. kind of how much he wants to restore it back to as new. And, you know, that obviously adds, you know, certain, you know, extra steps.
Sure. So you could do a serviceable repair that would return the bike to active duty without, you know, making it look like brand new.
Right.
Is what
paint
you're saying.
Paint and well, clear coat. Right.
I could, but I generally don't want to do that because it's such a poor advertisement of my
right. It's sure, ugly.
My yeah. work. I mean, sure. a proper carbon repair is not going to be particularly attractive. Just kind of there. And you know, because I'm putting, you know, multiple plies of unidirectional carbon, and you know, it isn't as, you know, when they make the frame, they're working from the outside in on the mold, so they can put a you know, nice finish carbon layer against the mold surface. But I'm going the other way, so it's not as attractive. So you know, I generally you know, want to put some kind of paint, you know, a base coat, clear coat on.
So if people have a repair or have a damaged carbon frame, they can take pictures of it and send it to you, and you will let them know what it's going to take to fix it, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's basically how this process proceeds. Yes, I normally get some photographs of the repair, of the damage, I mean, and you know, then I can, you know, with the experience I have, I get pretty close with my estimates. I very rarely do I have to vary once I actually get the frame and inspect it.
Sure. So you and I are old mountain bikers, and you've been around long enough to hear the phrase steel is real. And you know that, you know, those curmudgeons that, you know, are probably the most fearful and know the least about carbon bikes. So how do you feel about the question, are carbon bikes as repairable as a steel frame?
Well, I would probably say more so, because quite complex geometries can be repaired with a composite frame, a carbon fiber frame. Things like where the, you know, in the joint areas, which would be the lugs on a metal frame, can be repaired, which you know which I think would be rather difficult with a steel frame. You can do the tubes in between, but to, you know, remake a bottom bracket, let's say, or steer a tube.
Those tight areas are difficult to re-weld.
Is being, you know, is kind of partially ripped away from the down tube, you know, and I think that would be something that would be difficult to do with steel.
So is there anything on a carbon frame, given, you know, an unlimited budget or anything, that you cannot fix?
Well, one of the things about composites and carbon fiber in particular is it's very repairable. It does come down, though, to what it makes sense, you know, cost-wise, and the value of the frame and this kind of thing. Most of the time, I, you know, a repair you know, even one that ends up being $500 or $600, it's still half the price or more of a you know, crash replacement train. You know, and if that's a newer frame, you know, when people have frames that are 8 years old, you know, the scenario for repairing them becomes, you know, a little bit more, well, how much do I want to spend on this old frame?
Sure. Because you might want to go to a one by drivetrain and all the things that have gone on in the 8 years that surround the other parts of the bike. So we have a carbon fat bike frame here that is broken at the seat tube, the chainstay, and where else?
And the top tube.
And the top tube. just cracked. So you think that you could repair that bike and it could be ridden again?
I mean, sight unseen. Yeah, I mean, I would say very, very likely. If it's all still in one piece and it's in two separate pieces.
Yeah, well, no, just, I mean, I know you're a busy guy, but just as kind of an exercise, so we kind of see how this goes, could we send you pictures of it? And you would say, yeah, I can do that. And, you know, you don't waste a bunch of time on it, but give us an idea what it would cost to get this puppy back into service.
It
wouldn't take me very long at all.
Right on.
That's the easy part. It's the fixing of it that takes
me. I'm just curious, because this was... this was a guy that was heavier than the frame was designed for and ended up having a problem with it breaking. So
it's only sheared in four places.
Yeah,
that should be fine.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll take some photos and I'll send them up to you.
It wasn't me.
Yeah,
it wasn't me. It wasn't Gomez. Well, cool. And so let's just say we're not talking about this one, but let's just say I crack my chainstay on my carbon mountain bike. When you fix it, is it as strong as the day it came out of the factory? Or is it always going to have... Go ahead.
What I strive to do, and I strive to repair a frame in the manner it was built. So I approach it with removing all of the damaged material and replacing it layer by layer. I don't do a Band-Aid fix. I don't take a wrap and wrap it around a broken piece of carbon. Mm-hmm. I say I remove all of the damaged material. I taper the existing solid material out away from the repair. There's usually a hole because carbon fiber, when it's impacted, it delaminates and spreads from the impact area. So I have a method for creating a form that goes inside, and what I can see when I've cleaned all of the damaged material off, I can actually now see the layers of carbon that were put in there. I can see the orientations, but as I've tapered out the laminate of carbon, I can see that, and I'll end up making individual templates for each layer I'm going to replace, you know, starting with the smallest one, which goes on in the center, and it gets bigger and bigger until I've replaced all those layers. I use a variety of different materials, but my primary material is a 1 ounce or a 50 gram per square meter unidirectional, which is only 3/1000ths of an inch thick. Mm-hmm. So I can build up a multiple ply laminate, as they call it, in the same way in which the bike was made. I also use a technique which I can apply pressure when the actual repair is being done that consolidates the laminate with the equivalent pressure that the original frame was made. So I believe I'm doing a proper repair, not a Band-Aid fix.
Well, very cool.
So doing it like that,
So right. You could ride with confidence once the frame has been repaired. You can, you know, you don't have to baby it for the rest of the life of it. You can absolutely. You can give it a proper thrashing. So I'd like Chris here sent a note from the control room.
He passed the note under the table. Yeah,
he said, "Isn't Richard's Revenge named after him at Kettle?" So this is true. This
one of
is,
my favorite stretches of Kettle
this
Moraine
is,
Trail.
This is the Richard.
That is true. Yes.
Yeah.
So
that is
hats
true.
Off.
I cannot think of like any better cred than that right there, because right? that is one kick ass section of trail. So I really appreciate you coming on the show, Richard, and giving us so much information. We'll have a link to your website on our show notes. And maybe this is something we can, we'll have a talk to the carbon doctor once every now and again on our show. We can have you on as a guest again.
Sure. I'd be happy to do that.
Hey, thanks
Perhaps
a lot.
You could also indicate a lot of the postings I do, you know, or work that I'm doing, it ends up going to, I use Facebook because it's a little bit simpler to post a picture of repairs or refinishing jobs,
sure.
and that kind of thing. So
we'll put your Facebook page on there too.
Yeah, what is that? What is that Facebook page?
It's Carbon Doctor.
Sorry?
The Facebook page is it Carbon Doctor?
Yeah, it's the Carbon Doctor.
With a the? We'll find it. I'll put the link in the show notes.
Yeah, you'll find it.
Right on.
And, you know, I guess maybe my email address as well. If somebody
All
wants
right.
to contact me.
You got it.
Although, actually, if they go to any of the other places, they'll find it.
Very good. Hey, thanks again for being on the show, and we'll catch up with you down the trail.
Great. All right, look forward to it.
All right. See you later.
All right, everybody. Let's take a quick break here after talking to Mr. Richard, and we'll be back with the Fatty Farm Field Report. And Travis, or Kevin, or Greg.
So I heard you need a fat bike. Come to Zion Cyclery in Zion, Illinois. We have all brands, Trek, Borealis, Salsa, Felt, Surly, and more. Yo, we have all the cold weather gears by 45 North and Bontrager. Keep those fingers and toes nice and toasty. We fix bikes also, so you have any problem? Brakes, gears, suspension? We have the best mechanics in town. So yeah, visit us at ZionCycler.com.
You're tuned to Fat Bike Radio.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Before we slip and slide into the Fatty Farm Field Report, we do have a caller from the 907. Welcome to the radio program. Who do we have on the line?
Good evening, gentlemen. Travis, how you guys doing?
Good. I see you called in and caught quite a bit of the Richard Palmer Carbon Doctor section of the show.
Yeah, who is that rock star, man? That guy is awesome.
Well, if you got a carbon bike problem, that's probably where you're going to want to turn.
Call the Carbon Doctor. We actually interviewed, it's an actual cottage industry. I talked to three carbon repair people, and Richard and I went back pretty far, and he was available at the time. But the other two cats, Sean Small from what's his company called?
Good question.
Yeah, and the dude from that made that Trek time trial fatty bike out there in
some people
Iowa.
Got a lot of time on their hands.
So. We may have, hey Chewy, if you're listening to this, we may have all those people on.
We could give them to the guys at Fat Camp.
Carbon fiber.
We could saturate Fat Camp with carbon too.
So Travis, my brother from another mother, what's up?
Oh man, just enjoying a beautiful Alaska summer.
Uno mas.
Just got back from a nice little 10-mile loop on the fat bike. And getting ready to head off this weekend, I think, and do Resurrection Pass on my first fat biking trip.
Oh, killer. Yeah, I know that you were stocking up and getting all your bags and all your doodads and
whatnots and gazintas and things.
Yeah, if you get lost, I'll send you a Get Lost merit badge.
it's a real thing.
Yeah, buddy. So
I'll just
I think you're calling.
Yeah, you can't get lost on this trail, but really? Looking at a resurrection trail, a little 40-mile traverse, and most people shoot it in a day. But I was thinking, yeah, load up fat, you know, go test the gear and spend a night in the woods.
Killer.
Sounds like fun. What's the weather like up there these days?
Oh man, roasting, like 74 degrees.
Almost 24-hour a day sunlight.
Yeah. We've had a good mix of rain and sunshine, so the fire danger's been down. Supposed to have a little deluge here tonight and tomorrow, and then hopefully clearing out over the weekend.
Sweet. You got any plans for the 4th?
To celebrate my birthday?
Oh, yeah. It's Sven's freaking birthday, too.
Yeah, 4th of July, Sven's birthday.
Born on the 4th of July.
Oh, man. I'm going to celebrate that. The Johnny Walker Blue is going to get broke out.
Oh, that sounds tasty. So what's going on up there fat bike-wise besides your own trips? Are there any kind of tours going on or events? Or what's happening in the fat bike scene in the summer in the AK?
You know, there was the Salty Bottom first ever Homer beach race with the 20 and 50K.
Did you hear that?
Exactly.
It sounded like a moose. Or an elk.
That's fun. That's not even me fucking around. I'm just sitting here playing with my bottle cap. Tell me a story about a Bluto fork. Your stock carbon forkage versus Das Bluto. Sing me a few bars of that.
This is Das Bluto. Okay. Love the Bluto. Absolutely love that thing. It's not necessary in winter. And, you know, we've had such crappy winters for the last 3 years that running the Bluto year round has been absolutely awesome. We just didn't have much snow, much base. If you're in a place where, you know, you're riding on a lot of snow and a good base, I don't think it'd be necessary. And in fact, I'm looking for a new fork, my replacement here, another carbon fiber fork, so I can go back to rigid during the winter if we ever have snow again.
Did you ditch your Specialized carbon fork, or did you sail?
No, actually, I'm staring at it, man. It's sitting over on top of my generator.
Did you turn it into a bong yet?
No, I haven't turned it into a bong. Hey, that's a good idea.
Really? He's speaking of good ideas. I just wanted to give you props for using that that Bordo Centium box. Thank you very much. It's now being properly utilized.
Yeah. I don't think you're supposed to smoke out of carbon fiber. Just FYI.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Titanium is much better. More inert metal.
Excellent point.
Yeah, well, you could get sued for telling people to use carbon for anything but, I don't know, picking their teeth with.
Approved processes and applications.
All right, so Bluto is thumbs up Areno.
Yes, I did blow my seals, though. And the funny thing was...
Leave it to an Alaskan to say that.
Yeah, I want to throw that out there. You know, when I was shopping for a Bluto, I went to every bike shop in this town, and I asked the question, should I just go with the Turnigan seal now? And every shop told me, oh, no, we hardly ever see them blowing. Well, like 3 months into owning it, you know, 10-degree day, blew the seals, took it back to the shop, and went to the Turnigan seals, and I haven't had a problem since.
See, there's a happy ending right there. There's a story that our listener can learn something. Thank you, T-Bone.
Yeah.
You brought a certain level of sophistication and edumacation to the show that we seldom achieve. And that's why maybe should we spill the beans on your fabulous new version of The Price is Right?
Hey, before we do that, folks.
Yeah.
Well, let's just quickly
put me on the spot like that, Gomez.
You got time to think, because we're going to quickly take a little sidebar here and check in at the event of the week with Mr. J.K. Levin.
Hey, it's J.K. Levin in the event of the week.
What's up, J.K.?
Hey, hey. I have to run away to a place I can actually hear things.
Who is Christofferson on now?
Loud noises. I have loud noises. I'm trying to get away from the big loud noises.
Summerfest, everybody. Summerfest. Should go do it. How much?
All right, so Summerfest working out very loudly.
How much does the beer cost that you have in your hand?
$6.50.
Oh, why do they do the 50-cent thing? Lake,
yeah.
That's just that.
What I want to carry Lake around is a pocket full of change.
Oh, right on.
$6.66 with tip. JK Living, everybody. The best in the business.
I am. If you would be watching me walking, serpentining through the crowd here, trying to find a soft area to actually hear words that are coming through you instead of pops and buzzes,
pop.
It'd be amazing.
Buzz. Dude, we hear you fine.
Yeah, yeah. You're coming through five by five, man.
I probably sound very frantic right now.
This is Thunderbird 2, International Rescue.
Oh, yeah, I just made it. Oh, I think I just found solace.
Nice.
They have a lot of, like, Stevie Nicks scarves and stuff in the marketplace.
Are you rubbing them upon your face right now?
So, is the opening act done, and is Willie on stage?
Chris Christopherson is on stage.
Ah, okay.
80 years, newly 80. Newly 80.
That's amazing.
All right. Have the Quaaludes started to kick in yet? Or what?
The what who's? Indeed. The medication. Oh, I ran into our Kenny Nielsen.
Oh,
right on.
Uncle Tickles?
I was going to grab him for this yappery, but he kept crushing closer to the stage.
Oh, damn. So,
well, he's also going to be holding our 3rd of July fireworks spot for us down there at Veterans Park on July 3rd.
Indeed.
Thank you, Kenny Nielsen.
Very good.
Uncle Tickles, all you have to do is bring him beer and you'll have a spot on his blanket.
And fire.
Yeah, he's good for a holding position. It has a good place. Good place. It's worth going to that.
Right on, man.
Sadly and amazingly not be in town.
All right.
Yeah. So
that's psycho, J.K. Levin.
So, Mike, do you have a spot down there that's easily findable, or are you just wandering aimlessly?
Just wandering aimlessly.
Right on. I'm going to probably roll down there after the show, so I'll ping you.
Like,
this is now
packed up, so you're mandating. You're dealing with that. Between that and the Rebel stage, where
Swipe Right.
Okay, go.
And Joan Jett's at 10 over at the Briggs Strait stage.
Right on.
Joan Jett.
All right. Well, we've got some important people on the phone here from Alaska. We're going
to talk to somebody important.
We're going to go talk to them.
Bye, JK.
Thanks for checking in, JK.
See you later.
Bye. Au revoir, Simone.
Yikes.
And he's cut off. So, Travis, we've got a fellow Alaskan joining us right now on the radio program. Welcome to the show.
Howdy, fellas. How's it going? It's Kevin.
Kevin Breitenbach. How's it going?
We got Travis listening in as well, Kevin. So, you know, do your Alaska thing.
Hey, what's up, Kevin?
How's it going, Travis?
We're just going to play you guys some elk music.
The Call of the Wild.
I could have gone. That,
welcome.
That just calmed me.
So why'd you have Kevin come on the show? We're talking about forks or something, right?
We have what is it called? Tableware? Silverware?
Flatware?
Flatware on the brain. And Kevin, I was hoping that he was going to call because he just spent some time on the Loif fork.
He didn't even want to give it back.
Well, he might not have.
There you go.
I still have it. It's still here. It's not going anywhere until you guys take it.
So, dude, talk to us about forks. You've ridden an aluminum fork, a titanium fork, probably a steel fork, and now a carbon loify fork. What say you?
I don't think I've ridden a titanium fork.
No?
Which I've always wanted to. I've always wondered about those. But they seem to make noises. I don't know. Titanium makes noise. Mostly I've ridden carbon forks and now the Lauf. How do you even pronounce it properly?
I think they say Loif. Actually, I believe it means leaf.
It means leaf.
But they say Loif.
It does. I just like Lauf.
Yeah, it's American. Like, say it American like that.
That's right. I mean,
that's the cool thing about being from Alaska.
Hey, right. Don't froof it up there, Frenchie.
Because you're from Alaska, you can do whatever the fuck you want. You can be like, yeah, in Alaska, this is how we say it.
Another show, we earn our explicit rating. Thank you.
So,
all right, well, I gotta go. That's good.
How do you like that Loif fork? Loif.
I liked it. It's kind of, I liked it quite a bit. I didn't like it for everything, but I sure liked it overall.
You said kinda, on berms, when you really lean into it, it slows you down. It gets unstable.
I know what he's talking about because I read the story, and it does, on really, like, weird side load stuff, it doesn't stay square to the fork. It does have a tendency to compress more on one side than the other, which is kind of a weird feeling just a little bit, but that's pretty rare that you run into that circumstance.
It is, yeah. It's kind of pushing its limits towards, like, to me, sometimes what I think is, like, the lame end of riding a fat bike anyway. Like, I'd just rather be on a different bike then, you know, like...
The lame end of... you heard it here first, folks. Fat bikes are lame.
Well,
just one end of
Just like an Indy car would be horrible to go grocery shopping. Right?
Not when I disagree, man. Yeah.
There's no place to put the groceries. So
I'm just running into a couple things.
The guy that called in with important stuff to say isn't getting a word in edgewise here.
Am I talking too much again?
I'm just waiting for the giggle fest.
Oh my god! So well, yeah,
we can't make JK blow chunks today because he's down there at Summerfest.
Make myself laugh.
All right, so Loif still, you know what I loved about it was just the small bump compliance is so good when you're going on something that's like a consistent washboardy thing or something. Mm-hmm. It just really sucks up all that vibration that you would normally have to suck up your own damn self.
Yeah, it smoothed out everything. For a while, I was trying to get used to not sitting on my saddle because it smoothed out the front end, and then you'd realize the rear still doesn't have suspension. But it does 90, like it soaks up perfectly so much. And like we were talking about when, you know, you get it sideways or whatever, it really feels like it's perfect until it reaches its limit, and then it's just not very good. In those situations, or like if you miscalculate something, I noticed, you know, like with having no rebound, if you miscalculate some roots and you're going and you're doing a run really fast and you hit some stuff harder than you expect, that can take you for a jolt. But it really, it feels like a carbon fork up there. You don't feel like you have this huge. Yeah. Yeah. The hardware up.
Right. No, it's absolutely. Versus something like a Bluto, which weighs twice as much, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, it weighs 1,700 grams instead of 1,000 grams.
And
so, you know, I would imagine that from my old carbon fork on my fatback, I don't know how much that thing weighs, but it's probably pretty close to 1,000 grams on the old ones. It's just amazing how light it still feels. And
it's soaking stuff up. And there's nothing moving. It's the coolest right. shit in
and
the world. I just think it's awesome.
Completely maintenance-free. As
maintenance-free,
well.
True. You know, yep.
You're going to think twice about taking a Bluto out into an environment that routinely gets at 30 degrees below zero, a.k.a. Fairbanks, right?
In A.k.a. A.k.
A.k.a. A.k., right? So, A, you know, it really...
You're relying on this thing to make a lot of motions in, like, really cold temperatures if you've got a Bluto. It just seems like it's bound to fail. Like,
right. I was a pneumatic with, and a...
Kevin Murphy and Tim Bernstein up here last winter and... Uh-huh. Out the Iditarod Trail, and Kevin had a Bluto.
Mm-hmm.
And we're riding, and the second day we get out to ride, the first thing he does, and like everyone does this with a suspension fork, is like you lean on the front end, and like we all looked at each other like, oh, hey, look at that, it still works. And like that felt like the reverse of Bluto. Like, oh, holy shit, that thing still works. Like that's what you're doing when you're pushing on
you
those
just,
things.
You
know what I mean? Like,
you just described a kick-ass commercial for RockShox to run for Bluto.
I mean, it's just, yeah, I mean,
so did,
that's kind of what I think about it. Or whatever you want to call it, the Carbonara, it's always the same. You never do that. You never, like, push on the front and be like, hey, is it still working?
Yeah.
It just always does.
You're just sipping a cappuccino over there in the corner while those guys are checking their fork and be like, oh, thank God it still works. And you're just like, eh, no worries. I made this cappuccino in the time it take you to do that.
So are you a paid spokesmodel for Life yet?
I don't think so.
I think you should be.
So.
Yeah. You should be. You're singing the virtues better than a canary in a coal mine.
That's from our test. He tested the fork.
I know he did.
So
speaking of that, I did kind of forget one part of it. I probably know the answer, but what do you do with tire pressure when you're running that fork versus when you're just running a rigid fork?
You know, I wish I got a chance to ride it more on the snow, because that's where I think it would be awesome. And it changes a lot of things. Like, I just kept it normal. I probably had it, you know, 8 or 10. I'm not a Nazi with my air pressure. It just kind of, it goes. So probably I would keep it normal. One thing, like, that's cheesy and you forget in the winter season, and you've got, like, these nice smooth trails, but then you've got, especially in the spring when trails start to deteriorate, you don't want that front wheel diving in. And just to soak up the inconsistencies, I was always used to just, I'd let air out of the front so it wouldn't plow into, you know, almost so you could stay up on step. And that's where I got so much use out of that thing. I know it's kind of weird, but it was just the time of year I had it, of just, you never had to change air pressure, and you could stay up on, I did a lot of crust riding, it seemed like, this spring, because there was just a lot of it available. And
Crustafarian.
Just
to interrupt you while you really got a good thing going there, I just like to say that I would like to be like more of a Dalai Lama of air pressure. How about you, Sven?
No, I had one of those forks for a while too on a bike, and I agree with pretty much everything you said, and I always thought that, man, I can't wait for them to somehow make a rear end of a bike in a similar fashion. And I think it would just be the ultimate winter racing bike, just super light, just a little bit of squish.
First ride on it, I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
They need rear end on this.
Because you feel it in the seat, like you're saying. It's definitely like, wow, my back end is really harsh now.
Yubato's blow Uncle Gomez's mind now.
Yeah, it would look cool, wouldn't it?
It would look badass. It would look like a panther.
I thought when he teamed up with Borealis, that was the next thing coming.
Right? Well, I mean, the seat stays on those things almost look like they could flex.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
If they weren't.
Go the next step.
Oh, that's scary.
Grammony, I think maybe we just came up with a good idea.
You know what they should
royalties.
Here's what they should do, because as much as I love the Carbonara, if you're really worried about rebound damping, remember the old Lowell Leader? Wasn't that a beautiful fork? I want a fat bike version of that fork. Mert Lowell's, it was a parallelogram front end with a shock on top of it, and you were steering. It's just like the Carbonara. You were solidly connected to it.
Yeah.
I still have one. It's just not a fat bike fork.
Modifications.
But the idea, okay, so here's where I'm going with this story, is the way that works in the front The old GTLTS from 1995 had the same
in the back
rear end style, which is what you guys are talking about with the Carbonara and the rear end of a fat bike.
Yeah.
I think it would be sweet.
Hell yeah.
I think we need charts.
I am now in 1995. People, I can take a picture of that bike. It has Paul's love levers on it. It's badass.
Fantastic.
Anyway.
You'd have to figure out that lateral stiffness with a full bike with just the leaf springs. That'd be the thing.
They did it on the front end.
I think that's the thing. If they can figure that out, that stiffness, because like you were saying, because they do move, it moves, like each side can move independently, and you can feel that subtleness. And if they figure that out, it's a total fork for the masses. And that'd be rad. I just think that's cool.
Right on.
Well, cool. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks for your input. Yeah,
yes, I'm glad I got to call in. I should take my daughter to BMX. I'm going to go rip.
All right,
man.
We'll talk to Travis for more Alaska color. Thanks, man.
All right.
We'll see
you. Travis, where are you up here?
Anchorage, man.
Oh, okay. All right. You guys got a bunch
of people.
He called in. He was our
of Alaska.
He was.
I don't know. I feel like North Pole is pretty close to the armpit of Alaska too. So we're all there.
Alaska's got a widespread armpit.
All right, we're saying bye to Kevin. We're going to keep Travis on the horn for a second, though. Hi, Kevin.
Were you firmly ensconced into the Fatty Farm Field Report?
I don't know. I don't think we ever really stepped over the line.
I don't think so. I think
let's do that real quick, and then we'll talk to Travis for a little bit.
The Fatty Farm Field Report is brought to you by Quiring Cycles. The Quiring Triple B is the fattest ride on two wheels, featuring the next generation of 5.05-inch tires, Gomez. Visit QuiringCycles.net to see the next level of bicycle exploration.
That circumference.
And we have to have, it's just big enough. So we have to mention that 0.05 of an inch. We can't say 5 inch.
No,
because if it was 5.03, we would probably just say 5 inch.
Is there going to be a new hub standard now?
We've already been talking about
Snowshoe XXXXXXXL.
Yes,
baby.
We've already been talking about cutlery. Forks, I believe, is on the agenda. Let's let Travis have his piece, and then we can finish up this bad Oscar.
We're not going to talk about stabbing you in the neck with a pen?
Oh. That's just a suggestion from our listener.
I know.
Joe from Libertyville, Illinois.
You know where Joe is now?
Who says,
Iceland.
I want to stab Sven in the neck with a pen.
I know. He says it.
He has said it. It's probably why he doesn't come up here anymore.
So, Travis, any other fork lore or anything else you want to share with us? Here, down here in America?
No, I think pretty much covered it. Yeah, you know, the Pluto's great, especially when there's no snow around. Save my elbows, save the wrists. Yeah, I liken it back to 1992 when I got my first Manitou shock with like 40 millimeters of travel. On
elastomers.
Those were nice. I had one of those.
Yeah. I had a Manitou Mach 5
speed racer.
With a reggae headset. I had a Chris King reggae headset.
So when are other fork companies going to realize that like fat bikes are a thing and maybe, you know, there'll be more than two?
Oh, we sent our RST Renegade test fork out to Hawaii.
All right.
So that's our first test from Hawaii.
The Ren upside down fork as well.
They've been working on that pretty hard. We had that 11.9 and we had a couple of the other versions of it. I think the Ren, they've got a guy that was with Cannondale Suspension and he's tuned the thing pretty good. So I think.
And we always forget. Yeah, Olaf, man. We got that lefty and that fork rode great. So,
yeah.
I think now you have to buy the Cannondale to go with it.
But. Yeah, it's hard to retrofit that new fork to an existing bike.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd take some engineering.
But, I mean.
The point being, I mean, there's enough fat bikes out there
Box
in the world,
and Manitou,
right?
Man. Yeah, those are the two other companies. Oh, that
something with a straight steer tube. Maybe we could retrofit some old, you know.
RST, baby.
Yeah.
RST
Renegade, straight steer tube.
Well,
straight
we shall see.
Indeed.
It is wide, too. That thing is way wide compared to the Bluto. You could fit that 5.05 in there. I give you that extra 0.05.
What about my 707s?
I guarantee.
Damn it. Got 200 millimeter rims going on.
Did you see Floyd Landis started a weed biz down there in Leadville, Colorado?
Yeah, not just Floyd, though. Yeah. Who's his partner? His partner's another suspended doping bike racer.
Cycling News had a picture of him, you know, in the yellow jersey where he looks completely baked, too.
Well, and you, I think
I wonder if that's a filter you can just put on any picture and just like go from like regular to baked. Filter.
You mentioned he was opening in Leadville.
Right. Earlier. Like the highest dispensary in Colorado.
It's called Floyd's of Leadville.
Yeah. That's in our Plus Bikes links. Hey, I took a picture of my Plus Bike when I rode it yesterday. I rode Camrock, and that place is badass. Pretty nice. That's my new home trail.
I don't know. I saw somewhere where he had a partner that was also a racer that I don't know where it went. Hey, Floyd underwent hip replacement surgery in 2006, so he says the therapeutic uses for cannabis cannot be ignored. For years, I relied on opioid pain relievers to treat my hip pain. With cannabis, I find I can manage my pain and have a better quality of life.
True that.
Hello, Floyd. Welcome to the 2000 and whatevering thing, zings.
Yeah. The new weed.
Smoking dope since 1975. Thank you.
So, can I do a shout out to Ricky DeLeos?
No.
He sent in a tire weight, and we updated our tire weight page. So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I think that's still one of the most popular pages on our site.
Based on the number size of tiara that post wears,
Bazunga.
I absolutely agree. It's at least got to be top three, top seven, top.
You know, it's going to be number one, though, I'm pretty sure.
What?
Your new thing, your Gnome Proof Gear.
Oh, are we in the special segment now?
I don't know. Are we? Yeah, we are.
So we're going to do this new thing. We actually have one out there, Gnome Proof Gear. And it's
Gnome Gear.
And it sounds like that.
Lending so, gear.
It's not just going to be gear that I test. It's the gear that the 20-odd bike testers that...
And they all are odd, by the way.
And gnomes.
Exactly. It isn't necessarily stuff that we've been given to test. It's more... It's coming to, you know, we said it could be test gear or it could be just gear that you've bought. But
right?
By and large, we have about 10 of these pieces in the editorial process right now. And it's stuff that people bought with their own money and really, really love and have laundered a bunch of times and worn the hell out of them and that they would buy them again. So Gnome Proof Gear, seal of approval, is like our best of or editor's pick or something like that. And we're going to put them out over the summertime here where you'll be able to see the gear that our testers wear and read about the best of the best of that stuff.
Right on. Isn't that like... You know, like the movie with the dude and the plane and the thing and the cruise and the whatnot. The best of the best. Come on, Maverick.
I'm lost.
You're the best of the best, Mav. You can do it. That's Top Gun, like, ladies and gentlemen. That's my Crib Notes version of Top Gun.
Another cool thing about a lot of this gear is that it's a year or two old, so you can go on the old interwebs and find this stuff for half of what we paid.
Half.
Because we bought it new.
Half.
And now it's like, you know, older stuff. Because it's a season old.
Yeah, yeah. But, no, it makes good sense. And, you know, because it was good last year, still good this year. Why not save some shekels?
Exactly. So this is the time that we've put aside to hand it over to Chris Daisy.
Well.
And, he's going to say a few words about Zion Cyclery.
Yeah, well, exciting news, I guess you could say. I met with the Zion Park District today to finalize plans for the Beulah Park Boogie Bicycle Race.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, September 24th. Mark your calendars somewhere around 1 p.m.-ish.
We don't have all the stuff set up quite yet in terms of, you know, links you can go to, but it's coming down the road, so watch for it.
Gonna have a fat bike class, I assume.
Yes, sir, of course. I did snatch the URL BeulahBoogie.com, so eventually that will go somewhere.
It's not the new band's name.
Not yet.
Well, cool. Our show this evening has been brought to you by the Bikes, Parts, and Chaos of Surly Bikes. Learn more about life, liberty, and the pursuit of two-wheeled happiness at surlybikes.com.
If you have any strange thoughts in your head, you can call us at 818-918-2453 anytime, day or night.
Hey, if you aren't subscribed to our email newsletter, and you probably should be, so I'll put a link in the show notes, we made an announcement that we have a new t-shirt in the shop. It's our astronaut on a moonlander. Which it's been a very popular sticker. So it is now a t-shirt. We even have a color close to the NASA blue that they have on their fancy uniforms up there in space. So check that out at shop.fatbike.com.
Sexy. Join us next time for the occasional dose of fat when we discuss the correct way to pronounce Shagermall. And fresh from the Gnome Test Kitchens, we release details from Project Red Rocket and Blackjack Bikes.
But wait, ladies and gentlemen, there's one more thing.
You know, fat bikes have been around for about, a dozen years? So maybe you've sold a fat bike, maybe you've given away a fat bike, traded it in, and what have you. But what would happen if your fat bike decided to break up with you?
Your fat bike doesn't want you anymore. Golden days before they end, whisper secrets to the wind. Your fat bike won't be near you anymore. Tender nights before they fly, send falling stars to say goodbye. Your fat bike doesn't love you anymore. It's over. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody, except for Mr. Spinner Ryerson. What's up, Spinner?
I missed the fork calling you.
Oh, no. Well, you can do a little quick thing. We'll talk about a fork, and then I'll just do a reversional thing where I put it before it happened.
This is the occasional dose of fat, like after hours.
Oh, we can just
do Spinner Ryerson. Dig it for real, cats. We got Spinner Ryerson on the phone. He's calling in to talk about flatware and what he thinks about carbon fiber and your mama's panties.
So what is your fork and experience?
Yeah. What do you think I'm going to say? What do you think I would say about forks?
Surly steel unicrown fork.
Yeah. Nah. Fuzzy fork, offset. Love that shit.
Well, you've broken several frames in your time, but you've never broken a fork, to my knowledge, have you?
I hit a car.
Yeah. But what would have happened if that fork had been carbon fiber?
Splinters, I would assume.
I like all them brazen things.
I have no carbon fiber experience.
That's probably a good thing.
Really? We haven't stuck you on one? We're going to have to do that. You're going to have to ride the Red Rocket. Yeah.
I can do that. Well.
You'll give it a go, won't you? Spinner,
let me see. I might be allergic.
I have to go pee, so we have to go. Or at least I have to go.
Well, at least I got
these guys can talk to you.
Part, so I'm good.
All right, Spinner. Hey, thanks for calling in, man.
Yep. Sorry, I'm late.
Bye.
Bye.
Travis, we're out of here.
All right, man. You guys have a happy day, 4th of July.
Right on. How did you like Chris's serenade? How'd you like that final serenade there? Wasn't that nice?
That was awesome.
All right, Travis. Talk to you next time, man.
Knowing that she doesn't love me, I just want to go over and punch her right now.
It breaks your heart in two to know she's been untrue. But oh, what will you do when she says to you, go ride someone new, we're through. It's over. It's over. It's over.
And now the show's over. Hi, Travis.
You've been listening to Fat Bike Radio's weekly dose of fat. Find us on the web at fat-bike.com/radio. We'll see you next time.